Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing. Today is blah, blah, blah day. I had no idea that there was such a thing as blah, blah, blah day, celebrated every April 17th, Tom. To encourage you to listen to those nagging words from your loved ones or friends and finally take action on New Year's resolutions.
Quit turning your brain off to things you don't want to listen to?
Yeah. And that item on the CBS News about crowning a Miss AI, I tell you, this AI, they're coming for all of us. Huh?
So humans don't get to vote, apparently.
No, I guess not. All right. The Rincon Ventures folks sponsor our live line for our telephone interviews, Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We have a lot to unpack, as they say, with our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, founding director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she's a professor of medicine and public health and internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine. Dr. Mazes is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve U.S. healthcare system challenges. Together with her team at the center, she created and implemented education programs that have trained thousands of physicians, nurses, and other healthcare professionals and impacted the care of millions of people. A highly sought-after speaker, Dr. Mazes is editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. She's been co-hosting and doing a great job with Dr. Andrew Weil on a very popular podcast. It's called Body of Wonder. She was named one of the world's 25 intelligent optimists by Ode Magazine. You can find her at the website integrativemedicine.arizona.edu and follow her on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Dr. Mazes. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well, enjoying this beautiful spring.
We are having a lovely winter, and boy, anytime you can have like one or two 90 degree temperatures at this point of the year, I'll take it. The environmental.
Yeah, it's just been glorious.
Oh, it has been.
It's good to be outside. You know, go outside, be in nature. This is just our perfect time of year with everything blooming and the weather so lovely to spending time outdoors.
It really is. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has finally set the country's first federal limits on forms of those PFABs in drinking water are a class of forever chemicals. And this is an important story, Dr. Mazes, because it really affects so many millions of people in this country.
Yes. So PFAS stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. That
okay.
is a mouthful,
yeah.
And it's easier to say PFAS. But it's important to know what they are, and that that word fluoral stands for the fluorine that's in them. So there's a very strong bond in these chemicals between carbon and fluorine, and that has given us some really useful properties. For example, it is what makes Teflon, so our nonstick pots and pans. It is Scotchgard for your shoes to keep them waterproof, or sometimes on fabrics like raincoats to keep them waterproof. It's what's in the foam that firefighters use so that they can put out fires. It's in makeup. It's in water because the water gets contaminated from the industries that make it. It's in carpets and furniture. Artificial turf. So it's in a lot of places, and it is not good for us.
And the PFAS have a long history, unfortunately, here in Tucson. There was a point where the firefighters were doing all their drills with the firefighting foam. out of the airport, and Tucson Water has been trying to remove as many PFAS as possible for years now.
Yeah, so it is, as you said, you know, one of the things that makes that foam work. But because of this strong bond between the fluorine and the carbon, it does not break down easily. And that's why it's called a forever chemical. Like, once we put it into the environment, it lasts ad infinitum. And when it gets into our water, it can cause health issues. And the health issues are significant. And there are communities, and especially one in Virginia, that have successfully shown through studies that it is affecting the health of their community. So this is why the EPA finally did create a rule to drastically limit the amount of PFAS allowed in our drinking water. What it does is it can increase our cholesterol, it can affect our liver, and you can have increased liver enzyme levels on your blood work. It can make babies have a lower infant birth weight. It affects our immune system and our response to some vaccines. It increases the risk for pregnant women to have high blood pressure or preeclampsia, and it actually increases the risk of both kidney and testicular cancer. So those are some pretty significant health issues that have been shown to be affected by PFAS. And again, the underlying reason why the EPA is now changing its rules.
Well, the EPA has not said to the companies that have utilized PFAS heavily, like DuPont and 3M, that they must curb their usage. That's a very important point.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is one of the real problems in our country with the way we regulate environmental chemicals. So it's good if we say it can't show up in the water, but it probably would be better if we also said we're going to put less into the water rather than trying to filter it out. And unfortunately, that step has not been taken. It is really an important critique of our regulatory system that we don't have tougher regulations at the front end, you know, for the polluters. We have tougher regulations now for the utility companies.
And to show you how toxic just even a small amount, some form of PFABs, the EPA says that it should be below 4 parts per trillion. So,
right.
Oh my goodness.
Right. That's a very, very low level. And it will be hard for many of the water companies to achieve that. It's for 6 of the more than 10,000 different kinds of PFAS chemicals. So these are very widely used chemicals. And in Europe, where they have tighter regulation of some of these environmental chemicals, they are moving towards eliminating the use of PFAS chemicals, except where, for example, medical use or some other places where there's no replacement.
Any suggestions about what consumers can do? Bottled water presumably would not have PFAS at all, correct?
No, bottled water could have PFAS. So bottled water is not really okay. The best answer. The best answer is to filter your water. And this can be as simple as having one of those pitchers on your counter. That's a carbon filter, and they do remove about 70% of the PFAS. The stronger filtration system would be reverse osmosis, which would usually be an under-the-sink kind of filtration system. It's much more expensive, and that can remove about 90% of the PFAS. The ones on refrigerators, I know I have a water filter on my refrigerator. I'm grateful to have that. That is a carbon filter. So there are different kinds. The problem with reverse osmosis, well, there's two problems. One is they're quite expensive, so not everyone can afford it. And the second is they waste a lot of water, which we really can't afford to do in Tucson. So those are two issues with the reverse osmosis. But carbon filter is going to get 70% out, and that's a good step because the water utility companies have until 2029 to meet the new standard. So from now, 2024, for the next 5 years, if you want to reduce your PFAS exposure. The other thing is that while PFAS in water is absolutely one of our sources of exposure, it's only about 20% of where we get exposed. So we really want to think about, you know, can we get carpeting without PFAS or furniture without? It's in makeup, for example, lipstick and eyeshadow, in conditioner and shampoo, not all of them. So you can look for one without the PFAS chemicals. And one hint for everybody listening is if it says fluoro, F-L-U-O-R-O, in one of the chemicals in your product, that's probably a PFAS chemical. So you may want to choose a different product.
Boy, I'd hate to be thinking I'm using shampoo and conditioner with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go home and check out the products. Is there a website that people could find out if they're in so-called beauty products?
Yes, there is. So one of my favorite nonprofits is called the Environmental Working Group, or EWG for short. And they are a nonprofit. They have a website that is free and has extensive information about beauty products, shampoo, conditioner, sunscreen, furniture. Mm-hmm. And so you really can do a little homework on your computer, or they have an app on the phone that's called Healthy Living, and you could scan the barcode of products when you go to the store and be sure that they're safe.
Good information. We'll have more with Dr. Victoria Mazes coming up after we take our break. Want to talk a little bit about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They are located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and their new enhancement, which is serving alcoholic beverages with your meal, has been very popular, and it's available now. You could have a beer with your lunch. You could have mimosa at breakfast. They are open Tuesday through Sunday, 6:30 in the morning. The doors open. The website's monasdanishbakery.com for more information. We'll have more with Dr. Victoria Mazes from the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine right after the break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show, and we, of course, are pretty much smack dab right in the middle of the month of April already. Dr. Victoria Mazes is on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. She is the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is also a professor of medicine and public health. I want to switch topics from forever chemicals to a topic that it seems like forever people have been trying to figure out. What are the keys to happiness, Dr. Mazes? If I only knew.
But you probably know some, right?
I do.
What are the things that make you happy, Bill?
Well, trying to get as much stress out of my life as possible.
So that's interesting because I had sent you an article recently that looked at data from the study called Midlife in the United States, which tracks people's health and well-being and tries to figure out a lot of different things about their lives. But one of the things they asked them was whether they experienced stress in some form. And you might think that the people who had zero stress would be, you know, the happiest, the longest lived, you know, they would just have the best lives at all. But it turned out that it's not necessarily so good to have zero stress, right? That stress actually is one of the things that can be the feature of a healthy life because, for example, you are, you know, doing an interview with somebody famous. Maybe you feel a little stressed preparing for it, but it's also one of those things that makes you feel like you're performing at an optimal level in your professional life. For me, preparing for my daughter's wedding, for example, that was stressful on some level, but it was exciting and it was, you know, this wonderful family event. So we actually don't really want stress-free lives when we're thinking about our happiness or our emotional well-being.
Yeah, I'm so glad you pointed that out because every day when I go on the air doing a live radio show, there is a certain amount of stress, and that is it's a motivating factor for me. I mean, you've got to have a little of it, and it makes you feel like you are performing at a higher level to have that stress level.
Yeah, so there's actually a formula for this, where there's a formula for everything. It's called the Yerkes-Dodson law, bell-shaped curve. And essentially, if you imagine a bell-shaped curve, you know, you actually do better as you're going on the upslope of the curve in terms of your peak performance and your optimal level of arousal. But if you go beyond the peak, you know, then on the downhill side of that bell-shaped curve, the stress is too great. There's too much stress and your performance starts to suffer. And so for each of us, I think figuring out, well, what's a good amount of stress? Because we want lives that have novelty. We want lives that have new experiences. There are wonderful life changes that we may consider stressful, for example, starting a new job or maybe a new relationship or parenting children. You know, those are life changes that have stress in them, but they also are experiences that are considered positive, and the stress may be beneficial, as you said, to our motivation, to performance, to our health, and to our overall well-being.
Yeah, listener David just sent me an interesting message. He says, for him, it's yin and yang. The more stress you feel, the more happiness you feel. You can take medication to dull the pain for stress, but you do dull the happiness too. That's the opinion of listener David.
Yeah, and I think that is an interesting perspective of we all do want to feel, of course, happiness, joy. We want that side of the continuum to be high. But maybe if we're sensitive to those really positive states, we are also going to be a little more sensitive to the low end, where we feel sadness, disappointment. And so, you know, one of the things I sometimes talk to people about in my clinical practice when they tell me that they feel stressed is I try to understand, you know, what the thing is. So if they're stressed about, for example, a job interview, well, maybe there's a way to reframe that. You know, they want the job, they're excited about the job interview, and that stress might lead them to do more preparation, for example. So yes, there is some discomfort, but there's also the value of moving towards something that's desired in life. And I think that's true with a lot of first-time experiences. There's a certain kind of stress, some discomfort, some lack of familiarity, but also the opportunity to discover.
Yeah, and what about social support? That's kind of, there's a paradox here, isn't there?
Well, say more.
Well, in the report, I believe it was from Dr. Charles, notes that the paradox is having more social support is also an effective buffer against stress.
Yes.
We know that people are our source of stress often in life,
yeah.
But they're absolutely necessary, of course, because we're social creatures.
Yes. You know, there's a little bit of a joke amongst parents of adult children, which is you're only as happy as your least happy child. So, you know, as a parent, you worry about your children, and if they're going through a tough time, you feel it too, which goes to that paradox that it's wonderful to have children, and, you know, it's sometimes stressful when they're going through a stressful time. It's wonderful to have lots of friends, but the more friends you have, the more likely one of them may be going through a difficult time. And yet, human beings are evolved, you know, in tribes. We evolved in community. And having a social network is clearly one of the things that helps us stay healthier and, I would say, happier.
Of course, and it was pointed out in that article that you sent me that they're the economic factors, too, that can create all sorts of stress. The effects of the Great Recession was a collective stressor for so many people.
Yes. So in this study of people during midlife, they had planned to collect data every 10 years, but then they actually added a fourth survey in 2012 to look at the effects of the Great Recession. And they're now also collecting data of the pandemic. It is interesting when we all go through something together, in a sense, you know, there's that collective experience, and yet we don't necessarily have the same reaction to the same experience. You know, for example, one person who's asked to give a talk may be delighted because they love to do public speaking and they love to perform. Mm-hmm. And the next people may not sleep for days because they find it so stressful to give a public talk. So you could pick the exact same event, and one person thrives and the other person, you know, goes deep under.
And this might be a good point to talk a little bit about meditation as a de-stressor, Dr. Mazes.
Yeah, so meditation is a way of creating a little bit of distance from whatever the events may be. And instead of focusing on the stressor, focusing, for example, on your breath. That's often a common instruction in meditation, that the thoughts will come, happy thoughts perhaps, stressful thoughts perhaps. And when you notice you're thinking, you move your attention back to your breath. And by doing this repeatedly, you develop some equanimity and some more muscle to manage whatever the stressful events are. And one of the things that I like to tell my patients when they come to see me is there's now some wonderful tools online that can help support you in meditation, kind of guide you through meditation practice. So that's something that used to take a lot of study in classes is actually something that I think most people can now do with much greater ease.
And breathing through the nose seems to help too, rather than mouth breathing, I have heard. So there you go.
Exactly true. Yes. And that's good for all of us for many reasons. So do breathe through your nose.
Yeah. And I actually heard one of your podcasts with Dr. Weil. Breathing through the nose creates this, nitric oxide?
Correct. That's right.
Go ahead real quickly.
Yeah. So it's nitric oxide. It has an anxiolytic or anti-anxiety effect. It warms and moisturizes the air. It helps prevent infectious agents from getting into your lungs. So there's many, many health benefits to nasal breathing as opposed to mouth breathing.
All right, I'm glad we got that in. Dr. Victoria Mazes from the Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. Thank you, Dr. Mazes.
My pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, my goodness, the Green Things love what's been going on this winter and early spring. I mean, it's just been just a picture book. As far as I'm concerned, the weather has just been absolutely amazing. Seems like the rain came like every 7 to 10 days, like nature's watering, and the plants really responded. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Jan and Jack are the owners, and they are hands-on owners. These folks, really, they're there, and along with a great sales staff, they'll take you to the type of plants that you want to put in your garden, because these are plants that will do well in our environment. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, like we did at the first half of the show, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But we are in studio with our friend Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Try to bring him in every 4 to 6 weeks. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institute for Resilience. The acronym, appropriately enough, is AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects all across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, and just to put some numbers to one of your introductions, is that we've had 29 days in Tucson with rain since October. So,
wow.
And that's slightly above average. So, yeah, it has rained pretty frequently.
And I didn't check today. Just a couple of days ago, it looked like we had over 5 inches officially at the airport, which is almost double what we would normally have. So it was very productive. Rainy season, and isn't this pretty much as advertised for what we had said with the El Nino, or
El Nino? Yes, but let me say that I'm looking at the data right now. We've actually had at the airport about 7.25 inches.
Whoa! I was way off.
Right, and the average. So I'm looking at the period, which isn't really the winter, but I'm looking at the period from October through the current date. Mm-hmm. But on average, we get about 5 inches there. So substantially above average this year. And that's been the pattern across Arizona for the most part. It has been a very wet, frequently wet winter. And it did align with our expectations, as you noted. Mm-hmm. We had, so we always talk about this, when we think about climate, like we're always trying to sort of forecast what we may expect in terms of, more in terms of precipitation than temperature, in my estimation. And El Nino, La Nina, the changes in the sea surface pattern and the wind pattern in the tropical Pacific Ocean, they influence, for the most part, more than any other sort of natural fluctuation in the climate system, what goes on in southern Arizona. And during La Nina events, and we had a strong La Nina event this year, they tend to bring above average rainfall. And that is actually what we expect. I should say that the relationship between El Nino and precipitation is not a one-to-one. It doesn't always happen that El Nino events bring wetter than average conditions. Mm-hmm. So there is some chance. We're talking about chances and probabilities, but if you had to paint what was expected prior to this winter, you would say you would side with a wetter winter, and that is in fact what we had.
And this time of year, we look at snowpack. How was the snowpack in California, which doesn't really impact us with the Colorado River? In fact, it doesn't. Our impact comes from Colorado and Utah, the upper Upper Colorado River watershed. Any idea how that's performed this year?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the data. I'm racking my brain here in, in 3 weeks or so, and much can change. But
it was above average.
It was. And I mean, that reflected what we just said. At high elevation sites, that rainfall tends to obviously fall and persist as snow, and we had, by and large, you know, as a couple weeks ago, a nice water picture with quite a big snowpack. Now, I'll say that typically the peak in the snowpack is around April 1st for the Colorado, Utah mountains, and a little bit sooner here in Arizona and New Mexico. And so right now we're sort of on the descending limb. Things are melting out. And it does matter what happens in terms of the rate at which that melting occurs. And so temperatures are an important part. And that feeds back to influence what our fire risk is, because if we melt off in the high country, the snow sooner with warmer temperatures, then there's a longer period for the soils to dry out and the trees and the bushes and the understory to dry out. And that sort of elevates the fire risk there. I will say that, like, the sort of week 3-4 forecast, so this is beyond the weather forecasts, and so we're looking at sort of probabilistic subseasonal forecasting. It does have a tilt in the odds for wetter conditions, which is a little bit odd for this time of year. So maybe we'll sneak in another storm here in Arizona, or a small storm, I would say. Probably more likely that we just get something.
That we might get some more rain, is what you're saying.
Possibly,
by like mid-May? It's not. Are you talking about?
Yeah, mid-May? I mean, it's very unusual at this time
May
of year.
May is one of our May and June are our driest months, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah.
So but there is some unusual. Hints. There is some hints that maybe we'll get one more event, and I wouldn't put much stock in it. But yeah, it's not definitive that it's. We're not going to see more rain.
And the temperature scene has been really good. We hit 90 degrees a couple of days after our average, when we would normally hit 90 degrees. I like to see that. I don't know when we normally hit 100 degrees, but I'd like to see that also on the other end of the average.
Yeah, we're sort of in that... in that window now where the temperatures are going to rapidly increase.
Yeah, it's going to go very, maybe mid-90s, but hopefully we can hold off on the 100.
Yeah, and this is another one of the stories of the winter. And often, you know, rainfall and temperature are related to each other. But we did have, across the Southwest, below average temperatures in addition to above average rainfall. So, you know, that's a... you know, I think that's I don't know if it's a good sign, actually. I'm not going to use that as a predictor for what our May and June will look like. I can certainly say this. It's going to increasingly get hotter, and we are going to have many, many days where temperatures crest above 100 for sure.
Boy, you could take that one to the bank, couldn't you? It's going to get hotter in Tucson, Arizona. All right, Zach, this is a natural place to pause. And when we come back, some early predictions on the Atlantic hurricane season. And I'm telling you, they're talking big numbers. And we will be back with Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, climate scientist, right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and it is that time of year as things start to warm up, as Tom Fairbanks brought up on my screen. We'll be pretty much looking at the high temperatures over in Silver City every day when we do our daily commercial, our spot for them. And we always say it's going to be at least 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City this time of year than Tucson because of the elevation. And wow, they've got some great weather, mid to upper 70s, right around 80 degrees. So this would be a great weekend to sample if you have not been over to that part of New Mexico. Perhaps you've been to Albuquerque and Santa Fe and Taos, but never been over to the south west corner of the Land of Enchantment. Very laid back, great place, just kind of kick back, 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Their website is southwestnewmexico.org, and there you will find, you'll be very tempted by all the outdoor activities. Of course, the Gila National Wilderness is there. The Cliff Dwellings National Monument is always fun. That's, I don't know, about 30 minutes north of Silver City. And if you're into history, the museum at Western New Mexico University, the Mimbrace Pottery, is some of the finest of that genre in the world. So a lot to do over there. Great sponsor through the years. Thank you to our friends who are always ready to welcome the Buckmaster Show listeners to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We continue on in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio with our contributor on climate, Dr. Zach Guido, UA climate scientist. And we've been talking about really what turned out to be, I've been in town 36 years. I think this has been about as nice as it gets when it comes to winter and early spring. So, Dr. Guido, what are you hearing about the Atlantic hurricane season?
Yeah, it's that time. It's that time of year when
June 1st.
Yep, it's that time of year when we start thinking about hurricanes, both in the Atlantic and the East Pacific. So we are currently transitioning from a strong El Nino into what looks like it will become a strong El Nino into what looks like it will become a La Nina. I say it looks like it because there's, I think the NOAA has a a forecast of about a 60% probability. Usually, when you look at past strong El Nino events, they tend to evolve into a La Nina, but not always. La Ninas tend to influence the atmosphere in ways that sort of are conditions that favor hurricane development, tropical storm development in the Atlantic, by a process where there is the wind speeds in the atmosphere as you go up in the atmosphere change. And so we call that shear. And so when you have greater shear, it tends to tear apart the formation of the hurricanes. And less shear tends to be what occurs during La Nina events. And so hurricanes and strong storms are easier to form. The other component of this is what is actually the surface temperature, sea surface temperatures. And across the Atlantic, for the most part, it is above average conditions. That's been the case for a number of years. But when you get those two situations together, developing a La Nina event and really warm sea surface temperatures, you get a forecast for the Atlantic that calls for above average hurricane activity. I think,
2020, we had 30 named storms, which was, I believe, a record.
Yeah, and I'm looking at a printout here. Mm-hmm. So on average, there are 8 to 12 hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
And hurricanes come in a number of different categories, from minor to major. And so the really strong ones, category 3, 4, and 5, there's about 5 major hurricanes. Of those, 8 to 12. So sort of above average conditions are favoring above average hurricanes in the Atlantic. The opposite is actually true for the Pacific, and that's what we tend to be more influenced by, at least in the latter part of the monsoon season. So you get these tropical storms that form south of our area, obviously off the coast, that sort of move north, and then once they move far enough north, they get entrained. They take a right-hand turn. They recurve. Right. If they go far enough and they get into the westerlies, then they recurve back into into our area. And so the opposite pattern holds, or the opposite signal with La Nina is for the Eastern Pacific hurricane season. So there's I think some of the forecasts there are for near average or slightly below average hurricane activity. But all of the, you know, NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, other forecasting groups sort of make early forecasts, and then as conditions evolve, they, you know, update their forecasts. And so, you know, these are still at the early onset of the hurricane season, but we might expect above average in the Atlantic and near average to a little bit below in the Pacific.
A question I don't think I've ever asked you, is there always either a La Nina or El Nino in the Pacific or the Atlantic? Is there ever a period where there's neither of them, an inactive period?
Yeah, there is. So
in between.
Right. Yeah. So it's actually, this is a phenomenon that occurs in the Pacific Basin, in the tropics, sort of from Indonesia all the way over to South America along the equator. It's a change in sea surface temperature patterns and a change in the wind patterns above, and they're coupled, they're interrelated. So one is influencing the other, and vice versa. And so we measure both the conditions by both looking at the sea surface temperatures and the wind fields, and we partition them into a La Nina, a neutral, so that's what you're talking
neutral.
About,
neutral,
and yeah. an El Nino. So there is these three phases, and the middle phase is when the sea surface temperatures are right around their longer term average, and you can get. And so what ends up happening here is when you have a strong ENSO signal, either a strong or a moderate La Nina or an El Nino, it's exerting a force on the atmosphere that is discernible elsewhere. When it's in neutral, that ENSO strength is not as great, and other processes become more dominant. Mm-hmm. So we climatologists try to explain weather patterns, and the El Nino or La Nina conditions tend to be the where the most variability is explained, but only when they're sort of in their more extreme situations. In the middle, the relationships break down, and other things can play a role. And so, for example, here in the Southwest, precipitation during neutral events mm-hmm. can be all over the map,
uh-huh.
whereas the statistics are more clear for a dry signal during a La Nina and a wet signal for El Nino.
Mm-hmm. We will bring you back in June, and of course then we will be really starting to zero in on the summer thunderstorm season, aka monsoon. Any thoughts going around over in your neck of the woods, over in your shop, about what folks are thinking?
Well, I can't wait to talk about the monsoon. Yeah, we're starting to talk about it already.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that looking at the models, I was just doing this morning, and they're all sort of painting a dryish monsoon. And so the question is, well, what are they seeing in those models? Like, you know, and one explanation is there is really warm Atlantic sea surface temperatures, and that tends to, there's a relationship there with shunting the extension of the tropical high pressure system, and sort of brings drier conditions to the Southwest. There's also some indication of like cooler conditions off the coast of Baja in California that suppress that cool the Gulf of California sea surface temperatures, which also has a relationship to drier conditions in the Southwest. So I don't know what the monsoon is going to do. I don't know if we're transitioning out of El Nino into a La Nina, so that plays a role too, but it's hard to say right now. But you know, I would feel a lot better if the models were seeing, you know, a wet signal than a dry signal.
The temperatures will be, you know, if we can keep these temperatures around normal, that would be a great way to go into the monsoon. But sometimes temperature is a factor in bringing on the monsoon. As you well know, we need those kind of really hot, dry days to get things going.
Yeah, and, you know, we're in mm-hmm. a pretty substantial warming trend. And, you know, April and May mm-hmm. and June are the months where you can really see that, more so than other months, that increasing temperature trend. So, yeah, I mean, if temperatures are suppressed a few degrees, that would certainly be helpful in terms of comfort. I'm not sure it's a leading cause of like whether or not we'd have an early onset or, you know, a later onset. But it might be one of those factors. Yeah.
My hope is that monsoon 2024 will not be as violent to my neighborhood as last year. It was just unbelievable. We had a couple of like 1 in 100 year wind events within 10 days. I mean, very localized up at the Buckmaster bungalow. It seems like it parked right over our place, but hopefully someone else, maybe we won't get those, but we seem to get those, especially at the start of the monsoon, some violent winds.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, they happen every monsoon season. You get these really strong microbursts where winds, you know, can crest 60 miles an hour, and it happened to be, unfortunately, over your house last time. I mean, I watch my neighbor's tree fall down on one of them too. So yeah, the monsoon, like, it's a, you know, I maybe not using the right word here, but it is a fantastic phenomenon. But it does bring quite a bit of destructive weather, and people have to have caution and that sort of thing.
All right, Dr. Zach Guido. Thanks, Zach. We'll try to book something for you in June. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, on behalf of Dr. Guido and Tom, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.